Hello, friends. Welcome to Read 'Em and Weep. It's me, your host, Sammy. And on this episode, I'm going to talk about a couple of hands that focus on a very specific spot that you run into sometimes in No Limit Hold'em. And if you can recognize it, it's insanely profitable. So this spot is where you hold a weak showdown value hand, some sort of bullshit pair. And given the action, your opponent arrives in that spot with a range that's comprised entirely of either air or medium strength value, like some sort of middle pair. So when you get to the river and you check to them, if that player has their medium pair, they'll just check it back and see if it's good. But if they bet, it's almost always a bluff. So you can snap them off super liberally and make a lot of money doing it. I hope that makes sense, but if it doesn't, hopefully the hands do. So let's get into them. Hand one, 235 at the California Grand Casino. I'm in early position with 7-5 of hearts and I open to 20. Now this hand is definitely outside of normal construction. You should just be folding suited one gappers from early position, but I'm kind of feeling myself in this session, man. I'm playing good. I'm kind of running the table over, winning a lot of pots. I've kind of built up a pretty big stack. And it's also one of those tables where like, it's just very passive preflop. You run into these tables all the time at low stakes, No Limit Hold'em, where, you know, people just really aren't three betting without big pairs. So I'm just not really worried about getting three bet here very often. The other thing is that 7-5 suited is my favorite hand. It's my lucky hand. So I tend to play it a little more liberally than I otherwise would. So here I open a 20 from early position with it and I get four callers. LOL live poker, three players behind me as well as the big blind. So we go five ways to a flop. I'm second to act and the flop comes really good for me. It's king 9-8 with the top and bottom cards hearts. And I have 7-5 of hearts. So I flop a 7-high flush draw and also a 6 makes me a gutter ball straight. So the big blind checks and it gets to me and heads up or three ways, I would be using this hand as a blast off a lot of the time because it's got two really good elements for a bluff. It's got no showdown value, but it's got high equity. That said, multi-way, I don't love it. You know, on king 9-8 with half the fucking table in the hand, you're just so likely to meet some sort of resistance. And in general, you just don't want to be betting for value or as bluffs as much in these extreme multi-way scenarios. So for that reason, I decide to play it through a check and all three players behind me check as well. So the flop checks through. The turn comes a black 5. Making me bottom pair. So it's king 9-8 with two hearts and then a 5. I have bottom pair with 7-5 of hearts. I still have my flush draw and my gutter to a 6. And the big blind checks. And this is a really important check. It gives us a lot of information because what it means is that it's really unlikely that anybody has a big hand. Now on the flop, once the big blind checks and I check, if any of these other three players had something like top pair or better, you know, they had like 9-8 for two pair, something like king jack for top pair, they're almost always going to bet it on this really draw heavy board. They're not going to want to give free cards to four other players. The only player that this doesn't hold true for is the big blind, because on the flop, he's naturally going to check to me the pre-flop raiser. So when he checks here on the turn, it means that he almost never has a big hand like top pair or something like 9-8 or set eights, et cetera, et cetera. So now it's up to me, and I think this can go either way. I think betting's good because since nobody seems to have a big hand, if I bet and everybody folds, I just get to win right here and now, and that's great. And even if somebody's got a pair of eights or a pair of nines and they make the call, a lot of times I can bluff those kind of hands off the river, even if I don't improve. Now, the benefit of checking is that I'm not inflating this multi-way pot when I don't really have a very good hand. I just have bottom pair. And the other cool thing about checking is that if I make my flush on the river, a lot of times it can make somebody else in the field a second best hand. Like if the ace of hearts comes on the river, I can get value from somebody who has ace X. If the 10 of hearts comes on the river and it makes somebody with queen jack a straight, I can get value from them. If, you know, the deuce of hearts comes on the river and somebody's got pocket deuces, I can get value from them, et cetera, et cetera. So I think all in all, like I said, it could go either way, but I kind of like checking here. So I decide to check and it checks around to the button who now surprises me by betting 70 into a pot of 100. The big blind folds and it's back to me. And I think this hand is actually a pretty good check raise candidate, but I decide that I don't want to do that just because it doesn't make a ton of sense, right? Like, what hand am I checking twice in a five-way pot that's super draw heavy that all of a sudden I'm going to check raise on the turn? Like, that doesn't really track. So it doesn't seem that believable to me. Even though players at 2-5 are generally not great hand readers, it's just like, not quite sure about that. So I decide I'm going to proceed through a call, but I also start thinking, like, what the hell does this guy have, right? On the flop, I decided that nobody was very likely to have a big hand. So essentially what this guy's saying with his big bet on the turn is that this five improved his hand in some way, right? He has like pocket fives and he just made a set, or, you know, it made him two pairs somehow, or he's got 6-7 that made a straight. Remember the board's king, 9-8 with two hearts and then a five on the turn. The problem with that story is I have a five in my hand. So he can only have one combination of pocket fives that makes him a set. And by the same logic, like 9-5 suited or 8-5 suited that, you know, flopped a middle pair with no kicker and then made two pair, those are really unlikely too. Like, with the suits on the board, there's only three combinations of that available total. The big worry is that he's got a hand like 6-7 that made the straight, but I hold a seven in my hand. So while he can probably have all offsuit combinations, right? Because it was just a single raise pot and he called on the button, he could certainly be playing 6-7 offsuit that way. The fact that I have a seven in my hand decreases the probability of that by 25%. The other part of that is that formationally, this really seems like it could be a steal, right? Think of it from the button's perspective. It's a five-way pot and everyone checked to him on the flop and the turn. So he's last to act. This could easily be a spot where he's just like thinking the same thing I'm thinking, that nobody has shit. And so he's just going to bet and take it down. So I decide that I'm going to call his 70 here. But if he bets on the river, depending on the runout, I'm probably going to call that too, because it doesn't make much sense that he's going to have a really strong hand here, but he is going to have a lot of air. So I decide to check call the 70, and the other players behind me fold, and we go heads up to a river, and the river pairs the eight. So king 9-8 with two hearts on the flop, black five on the turn, making me bottom pair with my 7-5 of hearts, and then the eight pairs on the river. I check, and now the guy brings out a stack of 100 chips. Then he thinks about it for a second, and he brings out another stack of 100 chips. So now he's got 200. And he thinks about it a little more and adds 15 on top of that. And then he adds another 15. And then he adds another 15. And he finally slides the chips in, and he confidently says 245. That's into a pot of about 240. So he overbets the pot slightly. And the moment those chips go in the pot, I just flick in my chip, and I say call. And he shakes his head and he sheepishly turns over pocket threes. I turn over my 7-5 of hearts for my pair of fives, and everyone's kind of silent. And he's kind of looking at my hand. He's kind of confused. But the moment he gets it, the moment he understands how hard I just owned him, you just see his soul start leaving his body. It just like rises up to the ceiling, and this guy is deceased. And like the entire table is just silent. Like everyone's like, wait, what the fuck happened? This is like a $750 pot. And we just showed down fourth pair against fifth pair. And everyone's like, yo, what? And finally, one guy turns to me and he says, hey, man, that was a really good read. You had a great read on him. And that's kind of true, but it's also kind of not. Like, I think the way he meant it was, I had some sort of soul read on this guy. Like, I just like knew he was bluffing. I peered into his soul and just knew it. But that's not the way that poker really works. At least it's not for me. The good read that I had was that I thought through the hand logically and understood that there's just so few hands he could be betting here for value, but he has a ton of bluffs. And so when he bets big on the river, he's just polarized. And it's like, man, you just can't have enough value here, especially considering the cards that I hold in my hand. So I snapped him off. I owned his soul. It feels good. It feels good, you guys. It's not that often where you get to make kind of what feels like a special play. You know what I mean? Like, so much of live poker is mundane stuff. You know, you bet, you fold, you know, you do whatever. But every once in a while, you have the opportunity to make a great play. And I did it here. And yeah, very happy with myself. Allow myself to congratulate myself. Obama putting a medal on himself. Dot me. Okay, hope you guys liked that one. Let's move on to hand two. All right, we're playing 5-5-10 at this private game that I've been playing lately. An aggressive reg opens under the gun to 25, and then there's this nit two to his left in early position, and he flats, and it folds around to me in the second blind, and I look down at ace three of hearts. Now, this is a hand from this position that I would often be using as a three bet. But in this specific spot, I don't love it because of the formation. We have an under-the-gun opener and then a nit who's tighter than a nun's asshole in third position. And these guys have pretty strong ranges. So I don't think a three bet gets a lot of folds, gets both of them to fold very often. So for that reason, I just decide to flat. And fortunately, the $10 blind folds. So we go three ways to a flop where I'm first to act. And the flop comes 7-7-5 with two hearts. I have ace three of hearts, so I flop the nut flush draw. I check as I'm going to do almost always, and the aggressive player under the gun c-bets 40 into 80. The nit in third position now calls as 40, and it gets back to me. And certainly I can call and try to realize my equity, but I think that this is a really good opportunity for a check raise. I think that the aggressive player under the gun is going to over c-bet this board, thinking that he can take it down a good majority of the time. And the nit in third position, you know, if I check raise somewhat big here, like I think this guy will just fold all sorts of hands. He'll fold pocket eights and pocket nines and shit like that because he's a fucking nit. Like he does not want to put in big money without nutty hands. And I'm going to take advantage of that. So I decide to raise to 160, and my plans are foiled when the under-the-gun player quickly calls my 160, and the nit predictably folds. So we go heads up to a turn, and the turn offers no help. It's an offsuit king. Now, I don't think that the under-the-gun player should have a king in his hand hardly ever. I think he would definitely be folding all of his ace kings to a check raise, even if it were heads up, but especially because he still had the nit behind him to act on the flop. And furthermore, I hold the ace of hearts. So ace king is just super unlikely. The only king that he should really have in his hand is the king high flush draw, something like king jack or king 10 of hearts, something like that. But those are pretty infrequent. And I think that a lot of his range is middle pairs. Right? Something like pairs of nines, pairs of tens, somewhere in there. Those would certainly open under the gun. They would certainly defend to a check raise. And so I decide that this king is going to put a lot of pressure on them because I can still have a seven. I could be check raising with a seven. I could be check raising with pocket fives that flop the under full, but I could also have the king X flush draw myself. So a big bet here really leverages stacks. Because we have somewhere in the neighborhood of 1800-ish effective. So when I make a big bet here, it puts a ton of pressure on medium pairs that they're like, man, am I going to have to go all the way to the felt with this pair? So I decide to bet 300 into 440, but it doesn't work, my friends. This guy quickly calls. He snap calls my 300. And we dislike that quite a bit. The river, we're hoping for a heart. It's not a heart. It is an offsuit four. So we brick everything. We're left with our dick in our hand. There is a little more than 1,000 in the pot, and I have about 1,500 left in my stack. And I start thinking about how big this river barrel is going to be if I do it. And I start thinking, and I almost pull the trigger, but then a thought comes to my mind. And this thought is something that I've talked about in a previous episode where missed flush draws don't often make great bluffs because you want the other guy to have missed flush draws. So when you have one, it just decreases the probability that this guy has missed hearts, right? And then the other thought I start having is exactly this kind of thought, the kind of spot that we're talking about here, where if I check when he has those medium pairs, he has those nines, those tens, those jacks, he's not going to bet them. Like, he's just going to check back and see if they're good. So if he bets the river, I might do a lot of calling and hopefully winning with ace high. So that's the route I end up deciding to go. And I check, and he goes into the tank and he thinks about it for quite a while. And finally, he checks back. So I actually expect him to have those medium pairs a lot of the time here. And I just shake my head and I say, ace high, man. And he shakes his head and he says those two beautiful words that we just love to hear. He says, it's good. And I turn over my ace three and he flashes me 9-8 of hearts. So he had a lower flush draw than me. Remember, it was 7-7-5 with two hearts, and he had a gutter to a straight flush. So all of his moves make a ton of sense. Now, he did not end up pulling the trigger on a river bluff, I think because he knew that I could have king X of hearts. I could have a seven that I decided I was going to check the river on. But if he had bet, I think I was going to do a lot of calling there. I was going to do a lot of calling. So it was probably best for him that he didn't. But either way, I ended up winning a 1K pot with ace high. We love it. That said, I really like the way that I played this hand. I think I thought through all the streets well, and I arrived at this river decision where I almost pulled the trigger on a big bluff, and certainly in this specific spot it would have worked, but I think in general, this is the way I want to approach these kinds of rivers. I don't necessarily want to blast off with my missed flush draws, but when I check, if he bets, I can often make a profitable call. So I like the way I played this one. Congratulations to me. Obama putting a medal on himself dot meme again. All right, so we have gotten through two hands and there hasn't been one that I played shitty. So we're doing a bonus hand because I did not play it very well. Stay tuned for that. All right, throw me a freaking bonus hand here. This hand also comes from the private game. This hand comes from pretty late at night. The stakes have been upped to 5, 10, 25, and I am in middle position with ace-king offsuit, and I open to 75. The first blind flats my 75, the second blind flats my 75, and now the third blind, who has a very short stack, jams for 585, and we love that. So it gets back to me, and now I have to decide between an ISO raise or a flat. Now, I have, I don't know, like 4.5 or 5K in my stack, so I cover both of the blinds who flatted. The first blind has about 2K, and the second blind has about 4K. And obviously here, neither of them should ever have a big hand because they didn't 3-bet themselves. So I decide that in the rare case that they are trapping, especially the second blind, the guy with 4K, I don't really want to play that big of a pot with just ace-king offsuit. So I decide to just call the 585, expecting both of the other guys to fold almost always. But that's not what happens. I call the 585 all in, and now the first blind, the guy with 2K, back raises and rips it in for his 2,000. The second blind, the guy with 4K, folds, and obviously with ace king here, I'm not folding, so I call. We all decide to show our hands. And the first blind, the guy with 2K who back jam, shows pocket eights. The short stack guy shows pocket jacks. And I flip over my ace king. And we all decide to run it twice. And I lose both runouts. Just like that, 2K dust. And you know what? It's all my fault. Like, if I ISO raise preflop, like the guy jams for 585 and I re-raise to 1500 or whatever, both of the other guys just fold. And I just lose 585 to the guy with jacks. Instead, I lose an additional $1,400 just because I played my hand like a weak-ass soy boy. And frankly, I deserve to get wrecked. Like, it is such an amateur mistake, man. Like, fire me into the goddamn sun for playing my hand like such a bitch. Very, very, very disappointed in myself. This is a pretty short hand, but it's just one of those situations where I should always be ISO re-raising. I know the other guys don't have big hands, and I should just be ISO re-raising against the short stack and getting in with another $150 of equity heads up with ace king. Instead, I let this fuck nugget with pocket eights back jam on me and put the pressure on me, and he ended up winning a big ass pot in a situation where I should have just folded him out of the hand. Unfucking believable. Like, just so bad. Amateur hour over here. Very, very disappointed in myself for the way I played this hand. All right, you guys, that's it for the episode. I hope you guys really enjoyed it. The last time I checked, I think I had 66 star ratings on Apple Pods. So if you have a quick minute and you'd like to help me out, please leave a star rating on Apple Pods or whatever platform you listen to this podcast on. As always, I appreciate you. And until next time, my friends, play good and run pure.